Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
You gotta love Abreu. He is a dream for a manager. Shows up early, works every day. A great example for all the young international players the White Sox have assembled.
Got a hanger that time. Oh. Sends it high and deep to left and out of here. Third of the year for Jose Abreu. And I think as soon as Shane Bieber threw that pitch, he knew he was in trouble.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
Thanks again to Teddy Greenstein. Sorry for the abruptness of the end there. I looked up at the clock. I was like, oh my God, I am late. We need to go. I apologize. Sorry about that, Chris Tannehill. That was from Sunday Night Baseball.
Chris Tannehill loves it more than anything in the world.
Yeah, probably didn't love me so much in that last segment. We'll talk to Mark Grody in about 20 minutes, Matt Spiegel at 4 o'clock. White Sox got that Sunday Night Baseball treatment for the first time in what, six, 7 years?
Seven years, yeah.
How many?
Seven, yeah.
7 full years since they were on Sunday Night Baseball. Man, it was a, you know, we have A-Rod's, he's so weird. I've called him the child actor, like the child star, where he just got so famous so early, and then he's just like kind of always weird and immature, and you just don't really know what he's talking about sometimes, and he's just
I hate you.
he's just too famous. Like, he's too famous to be normal. He's too rich to be normal. He's too good looking to be normal. He's a child star.
Keep the salsa coming.
Exactly right. But the White Sox got the Sunday Night Baseball treatment, and it was a hell of a game. And I'm curious, Tanny, not just like that game, but everything. Like, so you're the host of the Locked On Sox podcast. How I see it is, like, this is the first year of the window being open. It's not all the way open, right? Like, this, it's still such a young team. They have injury problems. They have depth problems. Like, the years where the Sox will have, like, really high expectations to compete for a World Series is probably 2022, 23, 24. But who knows? Maybe they arrive early in 2020 or 2021, and that would be great. But, like, what happens is, okay, now you get on national TV, now you get a little hype, now you get talked about, and just the microscope and the pressure and the spotlight and the opinions, it all intensifies, and you don't get to just be like that nice little team that's the second team in town that gets left off the ESPN graphic for championships in the city. Like, a little bit more of the intensity and the scrutiny comes with it. Do you as a White Sox fan feel like you're ready for it, or will you just meet it with a bunch of resentment when they mispronounce the groundskeeper's name, like what happened last night?
Oh yeah, that was quite a moment there, and we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, I mean, it all comes with it. I mean, it's been a long 7 years, so I think, you know, any time the White Sox are take the national stage, yeah, you just, it's a good thing, generally speaking, unless it's not for something dumb that happened or bad that happened, like we saw with Eloy the other night in the wall. That was a national stage, but at a sort of a different level that you don't want. But yeah, anytime the national television audience is glued in and they're tuned into the White Sox, it's a good thing. And I'm ready for that. I was dialed into that game last night, and just, you know, that was the one they needed last night, you know, to take 2 or 3 to a division rival. And there was, you know, standings implications already early on here with that game last night. So, yeah, I'm ready for baseball relevance and games of consequence as we get deeper and deeper into the season here.
Good, because I think it makes it more fun. And I know White Sox fans on social media, and White Sox, it's representative, right? There's a little bit of a little brother feel, the second-class citizen feel, the underdog feel to White Sox fandom. We've talked about it on this show for years. Max talked about it for a career. The inferiority complex, the attendance jokes, the being left off the graphic, second team in the town compared to the Cubs, and everything that comes with it. But, man, it's fun. Like, that, now it's you're a good team. And you're going to be good for a while, or you're going to be relevant, some might say, for a while. And so, like, people are going to have bad thoughts on your team. People are going to have good thoughts on you. People are going to have hot takes on your team. But it was, it's a cool, fun time. I remember when I was in Kansas City and it started happening to the Royals, and they were on Sports Illustrated, the cover of Sports Illustrated, and they got a Sunday Night Baseball game, and then Joe Buck did a Fox game. And it was like, are they disrespecting us? What's happening? Flyover country? There's another baseball team in Missouri other than the Cardinals? And it was like this huge thing. And the same thing happened to the Cubs. Now, the Cubs always had the attention, right, because of the national fan base. But it was the same, are you slighting the Cubs? Are you overplaying the lovable loser? Stop showing Steve Bartman. Like, Cubs fans would get defensive of narratives that would be formed. And I think it's just part of what comes with it, because it's not like football. In football, your team is always nationally relevant, even if you're awful, because everybody has to get national TV games, because of fantasy football, because of gambling, because of only one game a week. Like the Jaguars and the Bills and whatever, or the Arizona Cardinals, like whatever team you consider like the also-rans of the NFL, are absolutely relevant nationwide. And all it takes is one player, one team, one thing to change it in an instant. And all of a sudden, like, Baker Mayfield's on the Browns, and the Browns have six national TV games in a season. But baseball's a little different. You got to be in a big market, you got to have a big fan base, and you got to be good. Well, they don't have the biggest fan base. They are in a big market, but they don't command all of it. But now they got that third thing. They're good and they're interesting. So they're going to start getting that attention. You went back through the broadcast, Tanny. What weirdness from A-Rod do we need to hear?
Well, we can't play an entire three-hour game here in this one segment when you're talking about his weirdness. But no, I forgot. You know, we set the stage for this talking about it last week. Like, I wonder what they're going to do, if they're going to profile any of the players. But then I forgot. They're not even there at Guaranteed Rate Field. They're doing it remotely from a studio. You know, so that was a whole different element that I forgot about. Oh, they're not going to do anything in-depth because they're calling the game from a set somewhere, you know. So there wasn't a whole lot of in-depth conversation, but one of the first things they started off with is sort of just giving the national audience just a little cheat sheet on what the White Sox are doing, and then, of course, A-Rod weighed in with his profound thoughts immediately after.
The commitment the White Sox have made to this year and beyond, I mean, this short-term window, they're done hearing about let's build and get good, right? We're building up something good here. It's supposed to be good now.
And give Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn a lot of credit for putting the combination of young international players and these free agent signings, but quality people is the people that Kenny Williams has historically always tried to get to that White Sox clubhouse.
And they wrote some big checks this winter, not with the idea that they'd, you know, catch up to the Twins in 2023. A lot of free agent signings to go out and make the trade for Nomar Mazara, but Edwin Encarnacion on a one-year deal. They write a big check for Grandal, same for Keuchel. Shore up the pitching end with Gio Gonzalez coming back again to the south side, Steve Cishek.
And what I like about those six names right there is six baseball players, pitchers and baseball, that love the game of baseball, go out and compete, are tough, and can continue the Rick Renteria DNA that they have going in Chicago. They have a lot of good energy going and a very, very bright future for the White Sox.
What do you think of it? Do you disagree with what he said?
I don't, but did you enjoy the word salad there by A-Rod? That was the bare minimum pieces of flair amount of analysis for what the White Sox are doing, I think, in that regard. You know, like, it's one thing if they thought they were traveling to one place and they realized, okay, we can't go to St. Louis anymore, so now we got to travel here. But there was no extra travel, so you would think the prep time would still be the same. But, yeah, that was just the absolute bare minimum in my book analysis. But,
well, yeah, what I was thinking was, he was like, you got to give him credit for bringing in good people. Okay.
The best people.
Yeah, exactly. We'd rather the good people, the best people, the only good people that are going to be the people who work for me because they're the best people.
And they're unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. I'm like, okay, thank you, thank you. That empty platitude of what it is exactly that that they're building. But I just, regardless of whether or not the commentary is any good, and a texter said, dude, it was one game on a Sunday night. And I understand, by the way, that Cubs Cardinals was canceled and it was thrust in here. I'm not trying to make too big of a deal of one Sunday night broadcast. What I'm saying is this is what's coming for the White Sox. Like, if they are going to be competitive for the next 5+ years, win a couple of division titles, Mad Dog Russo is going to talk about you more on MLB Network. You're going to get more A-Rod games. Last night, ESPN drops that Fernando Tatis Jr. is the cover story, the Jeff Passan piece for ESPN.com and ESPN the magazine. And they did a video component and a Sports Center feature, and it's all over the place. Do you think that the White Sox would use him right now? Face of baseball? Leading the league in home runs? Dude's ridiculous. The story that Passan did was incredible. Everyone should check it out. But it's like those types of oh, man, he could have been a White Sox. Oh, man, they traded him for James Shields. Wow. Imagine if they had, in addition to Robert and Eloy and Grandal and Abreu and Encarnacion and Anderson and Moncada, they also had the best player in the sport who's under 24. Like,
certainly that, true. That's kind of a flawed way to look at it, though, in the way I see it. And Spiegel was on the air over the weekend articulating the same point. It was like, that Tatis trade for James Shields in, I think it was May of 2016, when the Sox were still, they showed that maybe there could be a team that could overachieve a little bit. So they make the deal to help out their pitching staff. And at the time, you got to remember, people didn't know a lot about Fernando Tatis. And
sure,
you know, a lot of people, you know, give a lot of credit to the Padres development and Marco Patti, who, you know, scouted and signed Tatis, you know, to the White Sox. But that was sort of like the last move of a franchise that soon after, very soon after, came to the realization that everything that they were doing was wrong. So it was an important move nonetheless. Like, you know, it would be fine. It would be great to say, oh, well, you know, it would be great to add Tatis to the mix here, but it just doesn't work that way. It was that way of thinking that led them down the path when Rickon said they were mired in mediocrity and they realized that they have to go about their business in a totally different way. So I don't know if you have all the guys like Luis Robert, because he was signed as a free agent after that trade. You know, the sale trades after that, everything comes after that. That was sort of like, that was the breaking point right there.
It was the last move of the old way of thinking.
Yeah, the old regime, yeah.
Right. The problem is, we can bring it up with Spiegel at 4:00. The problem that I have with that is there was enough evidence across the sport, and not just in your own city with how the Cubs did it, but with how the Astros did it, with how the Royals did it. There was enough evidence that the old way of trying to, like, patchwork a rebuild and, like, rebuild while competitive and not tear it down, especially when you're not a high-revenue team that can just pay for a bunch of free agents, was the wrong way to go about it, that's – you'd like to come to the realization that the way that the Sox were doing it in the, post – whatever you want to say, 2008 to 2015 – There was like enough evidence in that era of baseball on the best economically sound way to do a teardown and a rebuild that it should not have taken trading Fernando Tatis for James Shields to realize the error of your ways. Would you say that's fair?
To a certain extent, yeah, I would say that. But you have to look at everything in context, right? You look at the roster that they had at the time, and they started the season in 2016. They had that really hot start. They were 20-10, I think is what it was. So they thought, and, you know, rightfully so, I don't know, but they believed that that team was a team that could compete. They still had their core of Adam Eaton, Sale, Quintana. They had veterans like Melky Cabrera. That was after the offseason of signing David Robertson and quote-unquote winning the offseason. So I think they're trying to do the best with the roster they have at the moment. So that's kind of how I look at that and how that trade unfolded in that
season.
So
Tatis doesn't hurt you? The what if of it doesn't hurt you?
Well, yeah, it's hard to look at him doing big things in San Diego and not say what if, but you also have to realize, like, everything is you have to think about everything in context, like I said. So
agreed.
You know, it's – you know, I don't think anyone foresaw this with Fernando Tatis. So you don't know how much of this is Padres development, how much of it is just is maybe the Sox not listening to their scouting. Maybe they did, you know, jump on the table and pound the table and say, hey, you have to keep this guy. You know, you don't know what those conversations were like. But yeah, it stings a little bit, and especially considering the AL player of the week was Frankie Montas, who was sent to the Dodgers in the three-team trade that got the Sox the Todd father. So it's a tough week in that regard. But yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, just you move on because you got the guy at shortstop right now won a batting title, and that's just all you can do for right now, because I don't know what you do with Tim Anderson. You know, granted, you'd like to have shortstops all over the diamond, and that makes you incredibly versatile. But yeah, you got to move on at some point. And this is, you know, he's going to have a lengthy career, and you got to stop saying what if, you know, every time you look at him. Just appreciate him for what he's doing if you're a fan of our game, and just see all the great things he's doing, and just have fun in that regard, because it makes for quite a miserable experience if you look at everyone around the league and look at it with the lens of, oh, you know, this guy could have been here if it was my team. If it was a Cub, this guy could have been here. You know, it makes it a less enjoyable experience to look at it that way.
That is certainly what you like. That is a healthy, rational way of thinking about it. And I know, just like the Cubs fan thing with Gleyber Torres or, you know, whoever, you're like, well, they won a World Series, and that's part of the rationalization there. So for the Tatis thing, you're absolutely right. With he was in A ball, and you didn't think it was going to be this, and all of that. It's when I watched that piece on Fernando Tatis, I, just as a fan of the sport, even if it's not my game, and baseball, like, damn, it'd be cool to have him in Chicago. And is that devoid of some of the context that you're talking about? Sure. But just, that guy is a lot of fun, and it'd be cool to have him here. What else did we have from A-Rod last night that we need to get out here, Tanny?
Well, there was a little bit of conversation about Luis Robert last night, so that was another thing we talked about. Like, okay, you've laid the groundwork for who the White Sox are as a team, but how would they approach their young stars? And here's them talking about Luis Robert a little bit.
The legend of Luis Robert, and it started after he signed his professional contract to get into the White Sox system, and White Sox personnel put their eyes on him for the first time. All the reports that came back to Rick Hahn and company were pure athlete, too good to be believed, going to be the next great thing. And then all the anecdotal things started coming. You know, I saw him outrun a school bus, and, you know, some of the fish tales started to be told.
You know, something, Maddie, that does not get enough credit, and Robert from Guantanamo, Cuba, having a guy like Rick Renteria on the bench, it's conducive to their development. Talking Spanglish, talks English to the American guys, but having someone with your native language, it's very important and a great move for the White Sox having Renteria. Help coach and mentor these young guys.
Did he have him in Guantanamo Bay?
Yeah, I'd like to think that Luis Robert is an escaped war criminal, and that's why he's so good and masterful, you know. He is not from Guantanamo Bay, which is still a place. It's a location and a place. The facility in Cuba, but it's also a place in Cuba. But he's
okay.
But he is from Guantanamo, but not Guantanamo Bay.
Okay. Do we add it to the list of, like, superlatives around Luis Robert?
Why not? We're running out. Lou Bob is struggling a bit here, so anything we can do to supplement those comps, I'm down.
Man, I'm just glad to have some A-Rod weirdness. Like, that's another big reason why I want the Sox to get as good as possible. Like, if the Cubs are going to be bad for the next couple of years and not going to be on Sunday Night Baseball as much, we need some A-Rod on this show.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're burying the lead here, and we teased it a little while ago. But, I mean, this is the Soxiest thing that could have happened. Of course, their game, you know, a tight game late. You'd think there's still people checking in all over the country. And of course, there's a rain delay. And of course, the sod father is taking center stage. And here's what A-Rod says.
Back to Leury Garcia. You can hear it. It's coming down so hard.
And the White Sox have one of the best ground screw guy in baseball, Roger Bozard. He's been there since 1983. And he is the best in the business.
They're dragging him in now. There's just no chance. You can't pitch in this.
Yeah, and if you don't think ESPN runs those effects a little too hot in the mix, yeah, you're not wrong there, because that was rain you were hearing. You shouldn't hear that much of it that loudly. But yeah, it was Roger Bozard, my guy. He says water your lawn at 3:30 a.m. Not happening.
Roger Bozard.
We should call him and see how he feels. What his phone looked like in terms of the blow ups and the texts and all of that.
Roger Bozard.
That's so great. Because you know, too, he got that handed to him, right? They're like,
yeah,
percent chance,
absolutely.
Right? Percent chance Alex Rodriguez knew who Roger Bozard was before the broadcast is approximately 0%.
I don't know about zero, because A-Rod played a lot of years in the American League, and you see these, they come to town once, twice a year, and you got to figure they're
5%.
Yeah, five is, yeah, that's fine.
Okay,
yeah. It's not like 60, but right. You'd have to think like he ran into him in an elevator one time or something,
A-Rod knows a lot of people. It's very unlikely, as legendary as the man is.
Yeah, if he wants to buy the Mets, he better get to know Roger Bozard.
Yeah, bring him. We will spare no expense to bring him to Citi Field. But all right, so there it was. There was the run through of the Sunday night baseball.
There is one more that I like. A-Rod the scout. He put on his scout's cap last night when he was talking about Frankie Lindor.
2-2 to Lindor. Apparently, there's still some of Puig's hair dye left in the clubhouse for the Indians, because Lindor's still rocking a little bit of the blue that Puig went with last year.
You gotta love this guy. He's struggling, but he is one of the best players on the planet. I call him a six tool player. The five tools and the smile, the big Magic Johnson smile.
What a weirdo. He calls him a six tool player. Okay, Rod. I don't get it. How is that guy who was so good in the studio during the playoffs for Fox so bad during the game? They're the same person. It's the same job. How are they? And I know it's one's a studio analyst, one's color analyst during a game. I understand that. But how is he so bad? It seems impossible.
It's like, I want to like him, and he seems like to have a lot of respect from a lot of the players, which is a big part of doing that gig and getting inside info and having the personable interviews and walking around, on the field with them like he did with Baez a few years back. But I think he's just trying to be what he thinks a color analyst would sound like, if that makes sense. Like, that's something that, a color analyst would say, but shouldn't say, saying the quiet part out loud type of thing.
His sixth tool is his smile, which he opens between the times of salsa. You weirdo.
And that's I call him a six tool player. The five tools and the smile, the big Magic Johnson smile.
Okay, buddy. We have Matt Spiegel at 4:00. We'll talk more White Sox and their pursuit of national dominance coming up at 4:00. But a lot of Bears spoke over the weekend, and the quarterback competition actually takes the field later this week. Mark Grody catches us up on all we need to know.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Next on The Score.
Here's the man that you fear most in football staring you right in the face.
Mark Grody.
I call him a maniac. Stone maniac.
Covering the Bears for 670 The Score.
You had to overcome the mystique. It was almost like an odor. He exuded a kind of a presence.
Sideline reporter for Bears Radio, WBBM.
His whole damn life was football. Wasn't driving a pretty car. Wasn't going to the local bar and pounding your chest, I'm the greatest. It was the opposite.
Mark Grody.
He was Moby Dick in a goldfish bowl.
Mark Grody with McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
Mark Grody joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Stay safe out there with the storm coming to Chicago. Heavy winds expected. Damage being reported in other parts of the state and west of the city. So, get ready to hunker down in a little bit, and you know, if you got anything outside that can be removed and brought inside or tied down, do it, because these winds seem fierce. Apparently, Mark Grody had an incident with the grobber at 4:45 this morning. We have audio. We'll get to that in a little bit. But first, Mark, let's talk Bears. What's up, Grody?
You know, man, I am living 35 floors up and preparing for this Derrico, is that how you say it? Is that what the name of the weather word is for what we're about to get tonight? 100 miles per hour wind? No? No?
Is that how you pronounce it? I don't know what it is.
D-E-R-E-C-H-O is the word. So whatever that is, that's what we're getting. So, hey, why not? At what point, what exactly is rock bottom in Chicago these days? I don't know what it is. Maybe it's this Derrico.
Yeah, man. Maybe it's the storm we deserve. I have no idea. A lot of people around the Bears have said a lot of things since I last, frankly, cared to tune in to what they were saying. Like actual sports have been happening, and so I've missed, frankly, some of it. Like, you obviously have not, as our Bears reporter. What are the most interesting things that have been said by the Bears brass since you were last on?
I'm glad you asked, because it's hard to decipher anything particularly interesting just because of the lack of action at Halas Hall, and it's nobody's fault. It's just because there's not a lot going on. So, but I've listened carefully, obviously been a part of all of these, and there are a few things that I thought of that were very poignant and will be going forward. And for me, it's actually a couple of topics on the defense, believe it or not. And let's start with the Bears defensive coordinator, Chuck Pagano. One of the developing stories we saw last year was where Eddie Jackson, the Bears safety, was positioned. And we saw him more up in the box, playing what many would refer to as a more strong safety position. He was involved in the running game more, as opposed to what he was in 2018, where he was more of the traditional center field, free safety, that kind of play. And in part, it was because Clinton Dix played a similar position throughout most of his career. So both were more comfortable playing that spot, and matchups called for Eddie Jackson to play kind of a different position last year. He did not have the same, at least, you know, statistical flashy success that he had in 2018. So, of course, we all wondered, is this going to change now this year? Is Pagano going to put Eddie Jackson back in a more free place? And if you listen to Chuck Pagano right here, it doesn't sound like that's going to be the case. It's going to be more of the same of what it was in 2019.
You just don't want to be, okay, we got a free and we got a strong, you know, because we just don't want to line up and, you know, Tom Brady comes to town on a Thursday night, you know, and just tell them, you know, because if they turn on the tape and every time we're in single high defense, it's always 39, it's always 39. So no matter what we're doing, if he always ends up there, that's not good for our disguise. So he's really good in the deep parts. He's good down low. He's good blitzer, you know, so we're going to play to his strengths. and we're going to do, we're going to play to all their strengths. You know, I got to do a better job, you know, as a play caller of putting all the guys, all 11 guys in the right spots to make plays. And then as far as, you know, the competition there, the traits part, I mean, you know, ball skills, anticipation, range, they got to be able to tackle, blitz. We're going to ask them to do a lot of things. So all those things we're looking for, they both can do that. It's going to be a great competition, you know, and the great thing was Coach, you know, Ryan, Coach Nagy, myself, Sean, when we talked to Sean about coming, you know, we laid it all out there, and we talked to Dion and said, okay, here's how it's going to roll. And they're going to get equal number snaps with the ones, you know, and they're going to have to come in here and compete, you know, day after day after day. It's going to be a little bit different, obviously, with no preseason, but we're going to create the competition and create the situations to where we can do a honest eval on those guys and give them both an opportunity, you know, to win that job.
Okay, a couple things on this, Danny. And again, that was Chuck Pagano, the Bears' defensive coordinator. And I'll get to the Deion Bush, Tashaun Gibson stuff here in a second. But as far as the way they're going to position Eddie Jackson this year, I thought Pagano, he laid it out pretty well. We didn't hear every single word of it. There was some other stuff, too, that he got into about where he specifically mentioned, hey, if Tom Brady's coming to town, we're not just going to lay it out simply for him so he knows exactly where somebody is going to be positioned. This reminds me a little bit of, and it's a completely different position, but I think there is a similar comp. And remember when Brian Urlacher started with the Bears, and he was part of a 3-4 defense where you had Ted Washington and Keith Traylor, and life was great for Urlacher. That was when he was at his athletic peak, and he was as flashy as could be because he had everybody else doing all the work for him. And then when they installed the Tampa 2 with Lovie Smith, it was a completely different position and a different style for Urlacher, which he didn't like at first, but then he became a Hall of Famer because of it. I think, I don't know if it works out the same way for Eddie Jackson, but they are forcing Eddie Jackson to become actually a more complete football player, and they actually have a lot of faith in him that he can do that. So while he may not look as flashy, which is too bad, I think that they're just trying to put him in a position to make more plays and to be actually a bigger part of the defense. As far as the Deion Bush to Sean Gibson competition, I hope he's being serious when he says that he's going to give Bush a chance to compete for that job, because believe it or not, I think that Bush is a better tandem for Eddie Jackson in that he is more of the traditional strong, the guy that's willing to do the dirty work, more like Adrian Amos, who was the best combination with Eddie Jackson when he was here before he signed with Green Bay. It's probably going to be Gibson, because why do you bring him in if it's not going to be Gibson? But I do hope that they give Bush a long look.
Interesting stuff. That was Chuck Pagano on Eddie Jackson. Let's go to the offensive side of the ball here so that we be sure to have enough time before the end of the hour to fully unpack your beef with the Grobber, because that really, Grody, let's be honest, it's probably the thing I'm most interested in all of this. But they're taking the field, but we know there's no preseason games. Where do we stand in terms of everything that every coach and whatever has said, about the current state of the quarterback situation?
Well, let's hear really quickly. The latest to weigh in on the quarterback competition was the Bears quarterback's coach, John DeFilippo, and here's Flip.
I don't know if it's an early edge. I would, you know, kind of echo what Coach Nagy said the other day, you know, which I think was 100% accurate. I think that it was more of a disadvantage for Nick than maybe an edge. You know, I think that anytime you know your teammates, and let's call it what it is, guys. These guys are people too. So Nick had to move to a new city. Okay. He had to move into a new house with two young kids. He had to move his family across country. That's real. You know what I'm saying? That's real. And, you know, I worried about some of those issues when Kirk came to us in Minnesota. I mean, that's real. He'd been in Washington for however many years. And so not only is there change in the building, but there's change in your life as well that you have to make sure as a quarterback coach. That I tell those guys all the time, my job is not only your welfare in this building, but your welfare outside this building. And so I take a lot of pride in that and making sure those guys are doing okay outside the building as well. So, you know, I would say, I don't know if anyone has an edge, but I would say it's a little bit of a disadvantage for for, like echoing Coach Nagy's words, a little bit of a disadvantage for Nick, just because, again, we know, we all know the what's new in the building, you know, the teammates, the weight coaches, the strength coaches, the nutritionists, all that. But then there's life outside of football that's new too. So, you know, sometimes we forget, and I'm as guilty of it as anybody as a coach, because we're all football, football, football. You know, this guy just had to move his family across the country too.
So, again, that's John DeVillebo, the quarterback's coach, and it is on the topic of obviously Mitch Trubisky having had more familiarity with the players that exist there right now and getting to work out with them in the offseason, and Foles not getting to do that. The thing, though, is, Danny, what I can't get past is the fact that Foles is friends with all the coaches and all the coaches love him, that he's worked with Matt Nagy, he's worked with John DeFilippo, he's worked with Bill Lazor, with Juan Castillo. How does Mitchell Trubisky compete with that, and why wouldn't all of those guys vote for a guy with whom they have worked in the past? I do think that Trubisky still has an edge, but when you really think about it, how does he compete with all of those guys that are evaluating him?
Yeah, I think that's real. It's how I felt from the beginning. I think that this is a coach's choice. It was a coach's trade. It's going to be a coach's choice. I think Nick Foles is going to be the guy. Tornado warning just went off on my phone as that was happening. Apparently, Shep has taken shelter out in Arlington Heights. I don't know if we have Shep now, but he just texted and said that the storm is there, and it's very real and very strong, and I am cleaning up the language that he used. So please be safe. Take shelter where you are. And, you know, just take every precaution necessary, because apparently these winds are being reported up to 100 miles an hour, which is not normal for this area. We will hear Mark Grody's conflict. Is conflict fair, Grody? Is it conflict?
I think so. Yeah.
All right.
Less situations. He was laying into me pretty hard, man.
I like it. Okay.
What's the conflict?
Yes, we have a conflict between Mark Grody and Les Grobstein before Matt Spiegel at 4 o'clock on The Score.
I told you, quit asking me that. Drop the subject. I'm dead serious. Will you drop it? I'm dead serious.
Tornado warning for Cook County in effect. Take shelter. Go inside. Go to a safe place. We appreciate you listening to the McNeil and Parkin Show. Mark Grody is with us. He got his Bears report out of the way, so now he can get to the meaty stuff. He was on with Les Grobstein at 4:45 this morning. I don't want Grody to tamper with the jury here. I want to listen to this in full, and then we will score the conflict. And we at the McNeil and Parkin Show mob, he's called us the police of the score, will be judge, jury, and executioner on who won the conflict. Here it is, Mark Grody against Les Grobstein.
Seriously, though, man, do you like 17-inning, 5-hour games?
If it's real baseball, I don't – look, how often does that happen?
Often enough for it to be an issue.
Like once every 2-3 months? Sometimes you don't even see that in a whole season.
When there's an easy solution to even problems that happen only, as you said, once every 2 or 3 months, you might as well solve them.
And then it ruins the game of baseball, in my opinion. You ask me a question, I'm answering it.
I know, I appreciate it.
It doesn't belong. This is garbage. This is complete, pure manure.
I think it's exciting because you put the guy on second base
right away.
Exciting
for what? Oh,
it's
come
like,
on.
It's like lights, camera, action. You know what it's like? Here's the comp.
No, it's like you're taking a game and sticking it up that way. It's ridiculous.
No, it's like the shootout. It's like, boom.
And that sucks, too. That sucks, too.
No, that's awesome. It's like
you're out of your mind. You're out of your mind.
Less. It's immediate action. No, they don't.
They suck. They suck like a drinking straw. They suck like a Hoover vacuum cleaner.
No,
let me ask you a question, Mark.
It's the essence of sport. It's you and me. It's Grody against Grobber.
Mark, let me ask you a question. Are you doing that just to try to get me worked up?
No, not at all.
You really feel that way?
No, I feel that way.
Then I really feel sorry for you, because this is absolute crap.
I mean, so what? So now I'm a bad person because I
like
shootouts?
No, you're a great person. You're just a bad baseball fan.
Les, what does that have to do with the shootout?
You're a bad hockey fan too.
you want to move on to football? What don't you like about my football fandom?
Actually,
just because I like it when Bears players fraternize with the opposition.
Well, yeah, I don't like that either. And now they especially can't be doing that because of the COVID-19.
Yeah, that's true. That, you know what? I didn't even think about that. That works in your favor, doesn't it? You're not going to see, you know, somebody helping another, you know, a Green Bay Packers player up.
They're not
off
even
their
supposed
butt.
To help their own teammates up now like they always do.
Yeah, you're not going to see that. You're not going to see that. But, no, I am all for keeping baseball. Because here's the thing, Grobber. When you have let's put it at 13 innings. If there's a 13-inning game in baseball, that's where you start to screw yourself up for the next two or three games.
Let me give you a
little bit. Overusing your bullpen, and then you start to see position. You like position players pitching? You like that?
Every once in a while, yeah. A couple of position players did pretty. How many times did you end up seeing a guy like Travis Wood play the outfield for the Cubs and make a couple of nice catches?
Yeah, but do you really want him out in the out? Ideally, if you could feel the team, would Travis Wood be anywhere on your depth chart?
I might just like to see him out there just as much as I'd like to see a guy like Chris Bryant. Chris Bryant's a third baseman. He's not an outfielder.
How about Chris Bryant pitching? How about that? When there's no pitchers left and you throw Chris Bryant in there, you want him throwing his arm out?
I don't want him throwing his arm out, but he's not going to be one of those that they're going to put on the mound anyway.
Well, we've seen it many times through the years. And I don't even think they're allowed to do that anymore. I think, didn't baseball X that out?
They recommended you don't do it. I don't know that it's been X'd out completely.
I don't think you could have position players pitch this year. I'd have to look. It's easy to forget these things.
It was great radio.
Wow. You're just a troll and a bad sports fan. And doing that show from bed. Like, there was a lot going on there.
All right, score police. What do you guys think? Who wins?
I think we all won. Because I think the listeners are the winners. But how much of what you're doing there is performance art just to poke the bear that is the Grobber?
Well, I think maybe when I got to phase three and I talked about fraternizing with the opposition in the NFL, maybe that's where I started to enter into a little bit of poke the Grobber at that point. So, you know, we do disagree, but I, on a lot of these things, but I, you know, I kind of know when to slide one in. Let's put it that way. I will say this, man. He had me on the ropes a little bit. Like I'm literally cleaning the sleep out of my eye at that point. Grobber's been on the radio for 4.5 hours at this point. And then when he starts, you know, questioning my integrity, like going after me as a bad sports fan in two different sports, like right there, I was like, I mean, he won that round.
You were reeling.
Yeah, I was. There's no doubt about it, man. I had to go sit in the corner, get a little back rub, a little water on the head, and got back in there. And I thought I finished strong, but honestly, like after I got off the radio with him at about 4:59, I was like, "Woof, I'm awake. Let's go."
Yeah, I got a score for the Grobber, even if I don't think your position was totally genuine. I think which I appreciate because. Because you were just poking the bear, and for that, we were all the winner, because an angry Grobber is my favorite Grobber. Grody, thank you, my friend. We'll talk soon.
You got it, buddy. See ya.
All right. That is Moby Ditka. We've got Matt Spiegel. He's roaring and ready to go on Eloy, White Sox urgency, Craig Kimbrell, Marcus Stroman, Fernando Tatis. We got it all with Matt Spiegel coming up on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.